Chapter 7 Leading and Related Ideas. Leading. What is leading? If you ask most people this question, they might say leading is the process of guiding people in a controlled way toward an objective. The definition for organizations and their management is essentially similar, but it is not exactly the same. This becomes apparent from the following definitions of the word leading, which were taken from the indicated sources. 1. The managerial function of communicating with and motivating others to perform the tasks necessary to achieve the organization's objectives. This was a quote Hal Riegel, D. and Slocum, Jr., J.W. 1996 Management, 7th ed. Pages 765. 2. Includes motivating subordinates, directing others, selecting the most effective communication channels, and resolving conflicts. This was a quote Robbins, S.P. 1996 Organizational Behavior 7th ed. PG 4. 3. Induce another or others to accept the validity of something as a belief, course of action, or point of view. This was a quote Franklin Language Master Electronic Dictionary LM 5000. This definition is apparently not from a book on management or organizational behavior, but it provides some insight. The first definition is the best because it clearly defines the process of leading. The second definition contains the phrase selecting the most effective communication channels, which defines an ideal form of leadership. That is, if the most effective communication channels are not selected, and the other components mentioned are present, the process is still leading. Perhaps this is not good leading, but that is besides the point. We might be able to gain further insight into the process of leading if we examine the related concept of leadership. Most people would probably define leadership as the ability to lead others. The following definitions, taken from the indicated sources, reveal the organizational and managerial perspective of leadership. 1. Leadership is the process by which one individual influences others to accomplish desired goals. This was a quote Montana P. and Charnock B. 1993 Management, 2nd ed. Pages 216. 2. Influencing others to act toward the attainment of a goal. This was a quote Hal Riegel, D. and Slocum, Jr., J.W. 1996 Management, 7th ed. Pages 765. 3. The process of influencing people to direct their efforts toward the achievement of particular objectives. This was a quote Luthans F. and Hojets R. 1992 Business 2nd ed. PG 7. 4. The ability to influence a group toward the achievement of goals. This was a quote Robbins, S.P. 1996 Organizational Behavior 7th ed. PG 4. 5. Leadership is social influence in an organizational setting, the effects of which are relevant to, or have an impact upon, the achievement of organizational goals. This was a quote Sal, Frank E. and Knight, Patrick K. 1995 Industrial/Organizational Psychology Science and Practice 2nd ed. Pages 320. The first three definitions define the concept adequately. The fourth definition inaccurately implies that the leadership process is limited to a group. This is not accurate because leadership can involve one leader and one follower. The fifth definition is also quite good, but it is a general organizational psychological definition, and it is not specifically focused on the management process. Thus, leadership can be defined from many different theoretical and philosophical perspectives. Bayes stated, there are almost as many different definitions of leadership as there are persons who have attempted to define the concept. This was a quote Sal and Knight, pages 319. I will give my own definitions of leading and leadership. To minimize deficiencies in my definitions, I will use two paragraphs to define and explain the concepts, as follows. Leading is the process of guiding the actions of one or more individuals to obtain a goal. Leadership is the ability to perform the process of leading, as defined above. The word guiding means in this definition one or more of the following influencing, controlling, or limiting an aspect of behavior. The word actions in this definition means behavior that is in some way relevant to obtaining the goal. The word goal in the definition is used in a very general sense and it means one or more of the following: a specifically defined objective, a loosely defined objective, an objective that was never precisely defined, efforts to reduce overall risk, efforts to reduce a specific risk, efforts to increase overall functionality of a system, efforts to reduce dysfunctionality of a system, etc. The concept of leading as defined above involves observing others, motivating others, and communicating with others, in relation to obtaining a goal. This can be represented in a series of seven steps. Incidentally, These steps also generally apply to the process of influencing friends, family, volunteers, or anyone else to carry out your desires. The steps are as follows. 1. A plan, a goal, or set of tasks are delineated, which can be on paper or in the mind of the manager. 2. A set of instructions are created that relates to the above step 1. This can be done in a precise way on paper, or in a general way, on a conscious or unconscious level, in the mind of the manager. 3. The employees who are to carry out the instructions are selected, based on availability, relevant abilities and motivational factors. This can be a tentative list created in the mind of the manager, or an actual selection and evaluation of the employees. 4. The manager considers how she can increase the motivation of the individuals who are to carry out the required instructions. Note, the manager's power to motivate the workers can be represented by the Bertram Raven model, which involves reward power, coercive power, expert power, referent power, information power, and power based on legitimate authority. Reward power means giving rewards to the employee for proper work performance, such as money, extra bonuses, promotions, praise, promises for compensation in the future, etc. Coercive power is just the opposite of the above. It involves punishment and/or threats of punishment if the worker does not do the work in the manner required by the manager. This punishment can include firing the employee, harsh criticism, demotion, etc. Expert power is the ability to influence others based on expert knowledge. That is, the manager with expertise might be able to influence the workers simply because she knows more than they do. As a result, they follow her orders. Referent power is the ability to influence others based on positive personal traits, which result in admiration or liking. This might be based on a social and/or emotional desire to be identified with or obtain such traits. However, referent power might work because people want to be liked by an individual or manager with certain positive traits. They might simply obey the manager with positive traits simply because they like her. That is, people want to please individuals they like. Information power is a process of influencing others with specific information. For example, a manager might be able to persuade her subordinates to obey the rules if she provides relevant information, such as there are hidden surveillance cameras on the factory floor. Power based on legitimate authority involves following orders simply because the individual giving the orders is in a formal position of authority. Thus, employees might obey their manager simply because she is in charge and was given the formal position and authority of manager by the organization. 5. The instructions are prepared for the process of communication in such a way as to be understood and accepted by the employees who will carry out the instructions. In this process, the instructions are broken up into tasks that can be understood and successfully performed by the employees. 6. The instructions are communicated to the employees. This can be done orally, in writing and/or through another person. In modern times, recordings or video can also be used. Ideally, at least 2 of the above should be used, especially if the instructions are complicated. 7. The manager observes the performance of the employees and makes appropriate corrections. The corrections might include changes and/or repetitions of one or more of the above steps. The above paragraph suggests an interesting question. Are managers leaders? The answer to this question is partly based on the perspective and definition of the word leader. It also depends on the manager and her specific job. Most managers engage in the leading process to at least a minimal extent. In fact, most human beings engage in the process of leading to at least a minimal degree at one time or another during their personal or professional lives. Thus, a manager is not necessarily a leader, but she is a person that generally provides at least some leadership. Some managers are truly leaders and they may change the course of the entire organization. They may spend a considerable amount of their time influencing others in a manner of a leader. Thus, since most managers perform at least some leadership functions, and some managers are truly leaders, it is worthwhile to discuss leadership. This is done in the following paragraphs. Are some people born with genetic predispositions to be leaders? The genetic theory of leadership and its variations is an old theoretical perspective. However, most modern sources disagree with this theory. Montana and Charnoff, pages 221. The evidence suggests that leadership involves a set of learned skills that are specific to the leadership situation. In general, leaders tend to have the following acquired learned abilities, skills and traits. 1. The leader should have the specific expertise and knowledge required for the specific leadership situation. For example, an individual leading a team of electrical engineers in the production of a new product should have expertise in electrical engineering. Two leaders usually have the necessary social status, prestige, and/or power to gain the respect and control of their followers. 3. The leader should have the necessary cultural knowledge and experience to deal with the individuals she is leading. That is, the leader should be knowledgeable with the customs, language, style, etc., of the people she is leading. It is also often important to be knowledgeable of the subculture of the individuals being led. Ideally, the leader should be a member of the culture and subculture of the people she is leading. However, in the work environment, where people get paid to follow orders, this might be much less important than in other types of leadership. 4. The leader should have a good set of skills, interpersonal skills, in relation to dealing with other people. This includes the ability to control the self as well as the ability to control others. This also includes the capability to project confidence, enthusiasm, friendliness, etc. 5. Leaders are often high self-monitors and they adjust their behavior to the specific situation. That is, they monitor their own social behavior, such as style of communication, body language, and adjust it to deal with the individuals and circumstances they are faced with at a specific point in time. 6. Leaders usually have good communication skills, in relation to the people they are leading. This includes an ability to explain instructions and other information to followers. The leader should know how to communicate verbally and non-verbally to the followers. It also includes the capability to understand the verbal and non-verbal communication style of the people being led. The above list is based on a general assessment of leaders from an anthropological, sociological, and social psychological perspective. Thus, the list does not specifically deal with managers as leaders, nor does it deal with what organizations look for in a managerial leader. Hellriegel and Slocum present two lists, pages 25 to 27 and pages 446 to 448, that are specifically aimed at what the modern organization wants in a managerial leader. Their list is more specific in relation to leadership in modern organizations, but it does not contradict the general list presented above. The lists created by Hellriegel and Slocum are combined into one list and are presented below. 1. Empowerment. When a leader shares influence and control with followers, this was a quote, this is a process of sharing power with employees, such as the power to control their work, the power to take responsibility, the power to manage some of their own work, the power to perform some leadership functions, etc. 2. Intuition. The ability to scan a situation, anticipate changes, take risks, and build trust. This was a quote, this is an intuitive ability to evaluate a set of circumstances and respond in the most functional way. It probably is based on specific knowledge, experience, and thinking skills that allow the leader to make highly functional decisions when dealing with changing the circumstances. 3. Self-understanding. The ability to recognize a person's own strengths and weaknesses. This was a quote, it is important to know your strengths, because that is what you will offer the organization. Knowing your strengths is also a primary component of self-confidence. It is also important to know your weaknesses, because it makes it easier to compensate for the deficiencies, such as by delegating tasks that you cannot do well to subordinates. 4. Vision. The ability to imagine different and better conditions and ways to achieve them. This was a quote, this is the ability and willingness to visualize improvements in organizational functioning and create realistic plans and goals that relate to such improvements. 5. Value congruence. The ability to understand the organization's guiding principles and employees' values and reconcile the two. This was a quote, this idea is based on the reality that employees and the organization are likely to have at least some values that are different. The skilled leader can deal successfully with these differences, such as by structuring organizational tasks, sub-goals and rewards in such a way that it does not contradict the employee equals as values. An example can be an employee that has religious values and wants to take a vacation on a religious holiday. Such values can easily be dealt with by allowing the employee to have the vacation, providing she works extra hours on other days of the year. 6. Technical skills. The ability to apply specific methods, procedures, and techniques in a specialized field. This was a quote, this was already mentioned in the previous list, and it is very important for the modern manager who is in a leadership position. 7. Interpersonal skills. The ability to lead, motivate, manage conflict, and work with others. This was a quote, this was also mentioned in the previous list, and it is necessary for all types of leadership. 8. Conceptual skills. The ability to view a problem, an issue, or the organization as a whole and its interrelated parts. This was a quote, this is important for all types of problem solving. It is especially important to see the organization as a whole system with interrelated parts, because this can avoid undesirable and unanticipated outcomes of problem solving. 9. Communication skills. The abilities to send and receive information, thoughts, feelings, and attitudes. This was a quote that was already mentioned in the previous list, and it is essential for all types of leadership. 10. Critical thinking, the careful consideration of the implications of all elements of a problem. This was a quote. This is also important for all types of problem solving. It should be apparent from the above paragraphs that a person that is a skilled leader in one situation might be totally inadequate for the leadership position in another situation. For example, a leader who has an excellent technical and cultural background to lead a team of electrical engineers in the United States will most likely not have the needed skills and cultural experiences to lead a team of fashion designers in Japan. This suggests the question, what do you do if you are lacking the necessary traits, knowledge or skills for the leadership task that you are faced with? The answer is to appoint one or more co-leaders who have the necessary qualifications to help you. Just by accepting this idea, appointing co-leaders who have appropriate knowledge, skills and temperament, you can greatly increase your leadership potential, because you are no longer limited by your own capabilities. In general, leaders can be divided into two basic categories, which are informal and formal. Informal leaders are individuals who are unofficially treated as leaders by members of a group. Informal leaders are found in friendship groups, informal discussion groups, and in the work environment. Formal leaders are individuals who are officially designated as leaders, such as managers, elected officials, individuals of high military rank, etc. These two categories of leaders are discussed in the following paragraphs. The informal leader in the work environment generally is an employee without any formal power. She might be an ordinary worker on the assembly line, but other workers are influenced by her verbalizations and actions. This has relevance to the work environment, because informal leaders can influence workers in both positive and negative ways, from the perspective of official management. These leaders might be primary elements in the formation of unofficial organizational subcultures, which can sometimes interfere with productivity. This can be seen in the chapter on the Hawthorne studies, which is presented later in this book. A possible useful strategy to deal with informal leaders in the work environment can involve identifying the informal leaders, and then educate and persuade them to assist in working toward official organizational goals. Making some of these individuals official leaders, such as foremen or supervisors, may also be of value. Informal leaders that are truly disruptive or hostile to the organization can be placed in situations where they have no power to influence other workers. This can involve a job that involves working with employees with more official or unofficial power, or a job that is isolated from other workers. Of course, another alternative is to fire the disruptive informal leader. Formal leaders, managers, in the work environment are of course individuals that have official power to lead, and they do not lead with the same techniques or in the same way. The difference in leadership style found amongst managers is based on variations in their intellectual and psychological makeup. However, as will become apparent from the following paragraphs, the leadership strategies that are used by a specific manager might be more often based on her personal psychological tendencies, such as a desire to be liked and accepted, or personally held prejudicial beliefs about workers. One theoretical perspective of leadership is the managerial grid model created by Robert Blake and Jean Mouton. This model consists essentially of a two-dimensional graph, similar to the XY graphs we used in math class. With the managerial grid model, the x-axis is the manager's concern for production. The y-axis is the manager's concern for people, which is a concern for the emotional and personal well-being of employees. Thus, a manager can be rated on these coordinates: production equals x, people equals y. The scale for both the x-axis and y-axis is from 0 to 9. The model identifies 5 stereotype leadership styles, with the following coordinates: 1, 1, 1, 9, 9, 1, 5. 5 and 9, 9. These leadership styles are discussed in the following 5 paragraphs. The coordinates 1, 1 obviously represent a leader that has little concern for people or production. This type of leadership style is called the impoverished style. According to the model, a manager that accepts this style is probably just concerned about keeping her job. She does not want to make waves, and she passes orders down from upper management to employees. The coordinates 1, 9 represent a low concern for production and a high concern for people. This type of leadership is called the country club style. Managers who choose this style focus on creating a friendly atmosphere, with a concern for the well-being of the employees. This is likely to be done at the expense of production, unless the employees are highly self-disciplined and do their jobs without managerial discipline. The manager that uses the country club style of leadership probably has a strong emotional need to be accepted and liked by others. The coordinates 9, 1 represent the produce or perish style of leadership. As can be seen from the coordinates, this type of leadership involves a high concern for production, and a low concern for people. Managers that use this style of leadership are likely to use disciplinary measures and their authority to motivate employees. They probably do not like the workers, and probably believe that the employees they are managing can easily be replaced. The coordinates 5, 5 represent the middle-of-the-road style. This type of leadership involves a moderate concern for people in production, which is apparent from the coordinates. Managers that use this style of leadership try to create a reasonable compromise between the needs of employees and the requirements of the organization. The coordinates 9, 9 represent the team style. As suggested by the coordinates, this leadership style involves a high concern for both production and people. The leader that uses this style tries to create a team-like commitment in the employees. She might try to make them feel that the organization, and its goals, and its employees are one and the same. The above suggest an interesting question: are not the needs of employees and the needs of the organization two separate factors that cannot both be satisfied to a maximum level? This is probably true with some employees, jobs and organizations. There are situations where the needs of the employees contradict the needs of the organization, and vice versa. The most extreme case is seen in military organizations during war. This can involve placing military personnel in situations where they are likely to get wounded or killed. Less extreme examples can be found in certain civilian jobs that are extremely unpleasant, dull, and perhaps even dangerous. In such cases, the employees might prefer to do as little work as possible, and the manager may try to make them do as much work as she can obtain from them. As is probably apparent from the preceding discussions, the style of leadership adopted by leaders is often based on their attitudes and beliefs in relation to other people. Especially important is their attitude toward themselves and the employees they supervise. Douglas M.C. Greger formulated a basic concept that relates to this idea, which he called Theory X and Theory Y, which is discussed below. A manager that believes in Theory X has a negative attitude toward the employees she supervises. Such a manager believes that most employees tend to dislike work, are lazy, have little ambition, will avoid doing their job if they can get away with it, are intellectually limited, and generally lack creative potential. Thus, the manager that believes in Theory X concludes that employees must be carefully supervised and threatened with punishment to motivate them to do their jobs. Managers with this belief generally will not consult with the employees they supervise. They will just give orders. Managers that believe in Theory Y think in a way that is essentially the opposite of the above. They believe that employees basically like work, can learn to accept and like responsibility, are relatively intelligent, are potentially creative, are capable of self-discipline, and can manage their own work. Thus, managers that believe in Theory Y conclude that employees need to be treated well. They need relatively little supervision, and do not need much guidance. These managers are likely to consult with the employees before making final decisions. Professor William G. Auchi delineated a Theory Z, which is essentially based on the way Japanese managers tend to treat employees. This is based on a cultural perspective of the Japanese, which places a high value on the group. That is, when managers believe in Theory Z, they consider the capabilities, judgment, and power of groups to be of utmost importance and utility. They believe that generally a group has more knowledge, experience, and creativity than an individual manager. The manager that believes in Theory Z tries to create an environment of openness, trust, and group involvement in organizational affairs. The employees are treated as valuable members of the organization and group and are generally not fired. Thus, managers that believe in Theory Z will consult the group to deal with managerial problems. They often have regular meetings with a group of workers to improve production quality and cut costs. This is called the quality control circle. The managers who accept Theory Z are also concerned with the quality of the work environment and its impact on the employees. In general, Theory Z is the most humanistic, followed by Theory Y, with Theory X being the least humanistic. We can perhaps gain further insight if we attempt to place the leadership styles that relate to Theories X, Y, and Z on the managerial grid model, which was discussed above. If we do this, we obtain the following: Theory X leadership style is approximately 9, 1 produce or perish, Theory Y is approximately 1, 9 the country club style, or perhaps a little more concentration on production than the country club style, such as suggested by the coordinates 5, 9. The group-oriented style of Theory Z is approximately 9, 9, which is the team style. The above does not necessarily indicate which is the more accurate theory or what is the best management style. The answer is it depends on the work-related task, the employees, the cultural beliefs held by the employees, the specific nature of the organization, the internal and external environments, and many other factors. There are situations where workers fit the stereotype that is outlined in Theory X. They dislike their jobs, they are truly lazy, not intelligent, not self-disciplined, and thus need intensive and strict supervision and guidance. This can be especially true if the employees are working in a situation that is critical, requiring a constant work pace, and high quality, without errors. In situations where the workers are truly intelligent, self-disciplined, basically like their work, and have work ethics that are consistent with organizational goals, the philosophy suggested by Theory Y may be the best approach. If you have such individuals, truly intelligent, self-disciplined, etc., who also work well in groups, Theory Z might suggest the best managerial strategies. Most of the ideas mentioned in the above paragraphs, including Theories X, Y, and Z, apply to individuals in their personal lives. Some individuals believe in a type of Theory X. That is, they have a negative attitude toward people, which is likely to be reflected in the way they interact with others, especially with family, friends, co-workers, and employers. There are individuals that have attitudes that are positive and similar to Theory Y. Such individuals are likely to have confidence in the trustworthiness and abilities of others. They are likely to treat people with respect, understanding, and sympathy. And there are people that have the positive attitudes and are group-oriented and may have behaviors that suggest the philosophy of Theory Z. Perhaps the most well-adjusted and effective individual or manager is a person that does not have any fixed set of beliefs, such as Theories X, Y, or Z, limiting her behavior. Such an individual will adjust to the external realities that she is faced with at a specific point in time. This involves using the most appropriate theories, information, and actions to deal with the current set of circumstances that you are faced with. This approach is likely to be the most effective approach in business and in your personal life. The entire process of leading also applies to the individual as well as managers. That is, to some extent, most of us engage in some type of leading in our personal lives. We may have led our friends in social activities at one point in time. People that are raising children are constantly engaged in the process of leading. However, most of us engage in a type of leadership that is even more subtle than the above. When we exercise control over our lives, we often have to communicate and motivate others in specific ways, which is often equivalent to the process of leading, as outlined in the list of 7 steps that were presented in the beginning of this chapter. This is especially apparent when we have goals that involve other people. When we are dealing with such goals, our leadership effort might be very similar to the leadership provided by a manager in an organization. In conclusion, it should be apparent from the above paragraphs that the process of leading is involved and complex. If the leading process or leadership is inadequate, there is a high probability of a failure in relation to goal attainment. There are many problems that can manifest as a result of such inadequacies. The following is a list of questions that can help with problems of leading and leadership. Note, the following 7 questions are numbered because they represent a series of connected ideas in relation to the leadership process. 1. Do you have a plan, a goal, or set of tasks that relate to your intended leadership efforts? 2. Did you change your plan, goal, or set of tasks into instructions that can be understood by the employees you expect to lead? 3. Did you select the employees or individuals that are to carry out your instructions? Are the individuals you selected qualified and motivated to carry out your instructions? 4. How can you motivate the employees or individuals you selected to carry out your instructions? What types of power do you personally have to increase the motivation of the employees or individuals who are to carry out your instructions? Do you have reward power, such as the ability to pay money? Can you reward the individuals involved with praise? Do you have any legitimate coercive power over the people that will be following your instructions? Can you motivate the employees or individuals with expert power? Can you motivate with referent power? Will the employees or individuals help you because they like you? Can you motivate by providing information? Can you motivate others because you are in a position of authority? 5. Did you prepare the instructions for the employees or individuals who are to carry out your orders? Did you put the instructions in a form that can be understood by the people who are to carry out your orders? Did you divide the instructions into sections that are relevant for each worker or team? 6. Are you ready to communicate your instructions to the employees? 7. Did you observe how the employees were carrying out your instructions? Do the employees need any guidance? Are any corrections necessary? What changes can you make to improve the performance of the employees? Are any changes or corrections necessary in your instructions or style of leadership? Note, the The following six questions are numbered because they represent a series of connected ideas in relation to the skills that are usually needed by leaders. 1. Do you have the necessary knowledge and skills for your leadership task? If not, how can you compensate for this deficiency? Can you obtain a co-leader who has the necessary knowledge and skills to help you with your leadership task? 2. Do you have the necessary social status, prestige, and/or power to gain the respect and control of the people you are trying to lead? If not, how can you compensate for this deficiency? Can you obtain a co-leader who has the necessary social status, prestige, and/or power to help you? 3. Do you have the necessary cultural background to perform the leadership task you are about to attempt? If not, can you obtain a co-leader who has the necessary cultural background? Is there any other way you can compensate for a relative cultural deficiency in relation to your leadership task? 4. Do you have adequate interpersonal skills for the leadership task you are about to attempt? If not, is there any way you can compensate for this deficiency, such as by appointing a co-leader who has the necessary interpersonal skills? 5. Do you have the ability and inclination to adjust your behavior to the leadership task you are about to attempt? If not, how can you compensate for this deficiency? Can you appoint a co-leader who can help you compensate for this deficiency? 6. Do you have the best communication skills for the leadership task you are about to perform? If not, can you compensate for this deficiency in any way, such as by appointing a co-leader with good communication skills to help you? Who are the informal leaders in the organization? Are these informal leaders interfering with the proper functioning of the organization? Are the informal leaders interfering with your leadership? How can you deal with problems that are caused by informal leaders? Are you having any difficulty with a formal leader in your organization, such as a manager, supervisor, or an instructor? If so, how can you deal with this problem? Do you have a negative attitude that is similar to Theory X, in relation to the people you are leading? Is your negative attitude justified? Can you temporarily change your attitude to a positive one, to see if it works better? Do you have a positive attitude that is similar to Theory Y, in relation to the people you are trying to lead? Is this attitude justified? Do you have a positive attitude about groups that is similar to Theory Z? Is this attitude justified in relation to the groups you are working with? Are there any elements in Theory Z that can help you achieve personal or organizational goals? Do you have any beliefs or ways of thinking or acting that limit your behavior in undesirable ways? If so, what are these beliefs, ways of thinking or acting? How can you circumvent these dysfunctional elements in your psyche?